Let's pick up where we left off last session in Ezekiel chapter number 10. It's in the middle of a prophecy session that Ezekiel is experiencing on the fifth day of the sixth month. And this would be the very end of August in 593 BC. He's only been a prophet for a little over a year when this happens. And so he has been grabbed, or at least his spirit being, his very core has been grabbed by God from Babylon and taken 600 plus miles away as the crow flies to Jerusalem, and has been shown the abominable actions that are going on there. In fact, there seems to be a little bit of a time slip as well, where God is showing how the destruction of Jerusalem is going to be happening because of his actions, God's actions in the spirit realm. And so Ezekiel is the witness of all this. When we get to chapter number 10, he begins describing to us the presence of God's Shekinah glory there at Jerusalem. And this is the second vision that he has had of God's throne room, if you will. So without talking any more about the background, let's go ahead and dive into the text again. Ezekiel chapter 10, verse 1. Then I looked, and behold, on the expanse that was over the heads of the cherubim, there appeared above them something like a sapphire in appearance like a throne. That's almost word for word the way that he described this vision of the Shekinah glory of God the first time he saw it. And so the cherubim, they're the four-faced, four-winged angelic beings that are at the base of the throne, and they have these whirling wheels between them. He mentions those next. He said to the man clothed in linen, "Go in among the whirling wheels underneath the cherubim. Fill your hands with burning coals from between the cherubim and scatter them over the city." Now, the man that's clothed in linen is from the previous chapter, the vision of the man, I actually think it's a form of an angel, has marked those that will survive the destruction of Jerusalem, those that have grieved over the abominations. They won't be harmed and will be taken into exile. Six other beings with that one went through at God's command and started slaughtering, executing, if you will, those that were not grieving or those that were actually participating in the abominable things. And I think that's all matched up with what the Babylonians will do in the physical world once Jerusalem's walls are broken into. Now, this mention, though, of God telling that man with the linen clothing to reach in underneath the wings of these surrounding cherubim, past the whirling wheels, and grab some burning coals, this seems to somehow be tied into symbolism found elsewhere in Scripture. We know that there was an altar of prayer right in front of the Holy of Holies. The Holy of Holies was where the Ark of the Covenant was located. That's God's throne. And so right in front of it, really close proximity to it, was the golden altar of prayer. And there were hot coals on that prayer altar. In the book of Revelation, that's what we're told, is that the prayers of the saints going up from the hot coals described in that vision, those are the prayers of the saints. And so I think that the symbolism here is that this is an avenue of communication between earth and the heavenly dimension, the heavenly realm where God is ruling and reigning. And that these burning coals are somehow tied into the prayer process. And it might, in fact, be the prayers that some of the righteous people had at this time, that God would deal with all the sin that was going on in their era. Again, referencing the book of Revelation, we know that when one of the seals is broken, the fifth seal, that the saints, the martyred saints that are underneath the symbolic prayer altar, cry out for justice. And God tells them they have to wait a little bit longer. And then later in the book, a censer with incense and hot coals is thrown onto the earth as part of the beginning of the judgment in the book of Revelation. And so we see something similar here. This being reaches in, grabs some of the burning coals from between the Ketuvim, and then scatters them over the city at God's command. It says, "And he went in before my eyes." Now, the Ketuvim were standing on the south side of the house when the man went in, and a cloud filled the inner court. So Ezekiel is here in spirit form, and he can even see how the glory cloud of God is located in relationship to the physical world. So he's seeing the supernatural world overlaid on the spiritual world. Or excuse me, the other way around. He sees the supernatural world overlaid on the physical world. So the base of God's Shekinah glory is on the south side of the court whenever this being grabs some of the hot coals. And the moment he does that, a cloud spreads out. The glory cloud of God spreads out and fills the inner court. Then verse 4. And the glory of he who is went up from the Kerub to the threshold of the house. And the house was filled with the cloud. And the court was filled with the brightness of the glory of he who is. And the sound of the wings of the Kerubim was heard as far as the outer court, like the voice of God Almighty when he speaks. So Ezekiel says, I saw God's presence leave the glory cloud and go to the threshold. That is the porch area, the place where the two pillars are located. Now it's interesting, in the earlier vision, Ezekiel had seen God's glory get up off the Ark of the Covenant in the Holy of Holies and come out to the porch. So we're seeing kind of the overlay of a couple of different visions here. And when God's glory comes to the front of the temple building, where the two pillars are located, the pillars that are named Yakin and Boaz, which is a sentence in Hebrew, he who establishes in strength, or he will establish in strength. The glory cloud of God, again, just swells out and fills up the area. And the sound of the Kerubim's wings that are now moving, that is heard like rolling thunder as far away as outside the court. Verse 6 continues. When he commanded the man clothed in linen, take fire from between the whirling wings, or whirling wheels, from between the Kerubim. He went in, he stood beside a wheel, and a Kerub stretched out his hand from between the Kerubim to the fire that was between the Kerubim and took some of it and put it into the hands of the man clothed in linen who took it and went out. So we've got four Kerubim, and one of them, in response to the other being, the man clothed in linen, coming to him and requesting the coals, reaches back, grabs the appropriate amount of these hot coals, and gives it to him. Verse 8, the Kerubim appeared to have the form of a human hand under their wings. And that was something that Ezekiel had reported earlier. I failed to mention this, but in the earlier part of the book, in the first vision that Ezekiel had of God's glory, he only called these things the living creatures. Here he gives them their name, the Kerubim. The I-M on the end, that's a plural. Kerub is the singular. And it has something to do with guardianship, that's kind of a later understanding of this word. It's got related words in other Mesopotamian languages. But screening is also part of it. Something that puts up a barrier or a wall or a partition. And so these cherubim are the partitioning angels. And that's how we see them acting and how their forms are used in a lot of the passages. Remember when Adam and Eve had sinned, they were thrown out of the Garden of Eden, and two cherubim screened them, barricaded them from being able to go back in. When the tabernacle was designed and when the temple was designed, cherubim forms are all over the place, screening sinful mankind from coming into the presence of God. The most significant architecture was the veil that separated the holy place where the priests did their daily work and the most holy place where the Ark of the Covenant was located. There was cherubim interwoven into the design of that great big thick veil. And we know that on the day that Jesus died, the moment he said that the price was paid in full, that screening veil with the angelic screening angels represented on it was ripped in half from top to bottom, representing that the barrier between repentant and forgiven humans and the holy God of eternity was now down. Book of Hebrews kind of mentions this when it says that Jesus passed through the veil by the means of his body. He opened up a way, and behind that former barrier is now the anchor of hope provided by his salvation. It's all wonderful reality of what's going on in the spirit world, the physical world, the symbolic world, all at the same time. And so I hope you're really appreciating Ezekiel's testimony here. Back to chapter 10, verse 9. I looked, and behold, there were four wheels beside the cherubim, one beside each cherub. And the appearance of the wheels was like sparkling beryl. So it had a golden, crystalline sort of shine to it. As for their appearance, the four had the same likeness, as if a wheel were within a wheel. And that seems to be at a 90-degree angle for the axis on each of these wheels within the wheel. When they went in any of their four directions without turning as they went. But in whatever direction the front wheel faced, the other followed without turning as they went. So this is, again, symbolic, but also some sort of spiritual reality that this presence of God, this tower of God's presence, the Shekinah glory, didn't need to rotate and turn and move to take up a new direction because it was always facing the right direction because the angels are four-faced and four-winged, so they're always facing all directions. And the four wheels are wheels within wheels, which means they're always facing all directions, ready to go. And so just majestic stuff here. Verse number 12. And their whole body, their rims and their spokes, their wings, the wheels were full of eyes all around the wheels that the four of them had. All right, so the bodies of the cherubim, the wings of the cherubim, the wheels within wheels, and the rims apparently that are associated with those wheels have eyes everywhere. Now, I've actually seen representations of this with human eyeballs all over the place. And I'm like, no, don't think of that. What you should think of instead is the plumage of a peacock. All of us talk about the eyes of the peacock feathers, this tail in particular. And that's what I think is being represented here, is this beautiful, iridescent, eye-decorated plumage, not just of the angelic beings, the cherubim, but also of their attendant whirling wheels. And I shared this story the last time we were doing this description, back when we were doing the first vision of Ezekiel. There is a group, an ethnic religious group, very old, in the upper Middle East, in the mountains of Iraq. And these people worship something that they call the peacock angel. And it's pretty clear when you drill down into who they're worshiping is that they're somehow attached to Lucifer, to Satan, to the former cherub of the Garden of Eden. And so I think that's related to this peacock plumage description here. A little bit more. Verse 13, as for the wheels, they were called in my hearing the whirling wheels. So they're moving, and they might even have a sound to that movement. Verse 14, and everyone had four faces. This is talking about the angelic creatures, the cherubim. The first face was the face of the cherub. The second face was a human face. The third was the face of a lion. And the fourth, the face of an eagle. When you match that to the first vision of these same creatures, the cherub face must be the bull face. Why the bull and the cherub face get different names in the different passages, I don't know. But we've got a bull face, a human face, a lion face, and an eagle face. And in the earlier passage, we were even told which sides of the head they were on. For sure, we know that the human face and the eagle face are opposite one another. The cherub, or the cherubim, mounted up. These were the living creatures that I saw by the Kebar Canal. And that's where he tells us, beyond a shadow of doubt, this is the exact same thing I saw when I first was called to be a prophet. Verse 16, when the cherubim went, the wheels went beside them. And when the cherubim lifted up their wings to mount up from the earth, the wheels did not turn from beside them. And when they stood still, they stood still. When they mounted up with them, for the spirit of the living creatures was in them. These four creatures at the base of God's throne and their attendant four whirling wheels seem to be locked in relationship to one another. They are equidistantly located around the perimeter at the bottom of God's throne. And wherever they go, they move as one. They move as one unit, never breaking that relationship. Verse 18. Then the glory of He who is went out from the threshold of the house and stood over the cherubim. So here comes God's presence, His glory, out of the temple porch area, from between the two pillars, and comes back into relationship above the cherubim, back onto the sapphire throne, if you will. And the cherubim lifted up their wings and mounted up from the earth before my eyes as they went out, with the wheels beside them. And they stood at the entrance of the east gate of the house of He who is. And the glory of the God of Israel was over them. So now, the Shekinah glory, with the cherubim at the base, with the whirling wheels associated with those cherubim, leaves from the south side of the court and goes to the eastern gate to the temple complex. Now that means, in our visions we've been talking about, God's holy presence has gotten up off the Ark of the Covenant in the Holy of Holies, come out of the Holy Holies, come through the most holy place where the priests do their work every day, out onto the temple front porch, then out of there onto the sapphire throne of the Shekinah glory of God, and from there the Shekinah glory moves to the eastern gate of the temple. And then this happens. These were the living creatures that I saw underneath the glory, the God of Israel, by the Kebar Canal, and I knew that they were cherubim. Each had four faces and four wings, and underneath their wings the likeness of human hands. And as for the likeness of their faces, they were the same face whose appearance I'd seen by the Kebar Canal. Each of them went straight forward. Chapter 11. The Spirit lifted me up and brought me to the east gate of the house of He who is, which faces east. And behold, at the entrance of the gateway, there were 25 men. Now, we saw these 25 guys earlier, apparently, on the front steps or between the porch and the altar. So right out in front of the temple building, and they were worshiping the rising sun. They were one of the abominations that God wanted Ezekiel to see. So now here they are over by the east gate, and Ezekiel's been moved where he can see them. It says, and I saw among them Jahazaniah, the son of Azur, and Pelatiah, the son of Benaiah, princes of the people. And he said to me, that would be God speaking to Ezekiel, son of man, these are the men who devise iniquity and who give wicked counsel in this city, who say, the time is not near to build houses. This city is the cauldron and we are the meat. Therefore prophesy against them. Prophesy, O son of man. Now, these guys are bad guys. They are worshiping other gods and goddesses. They have led Judah into the cesspool of false worship, idolatry, and of bad justice. And so they, though, are acting as if they're in control and that they know what God wants. And so one of the things they say is, the time is not near to build houses. That's probably a reference to a prophecy sent not very long ago from Jeremiah to the most recent exiles up in Babylon to tell them, you're going to be there as a people group for 70 years. So go ahead and build houses, plant vineyards, and do all the other stuff. Get your kids married, marry your kids to other people's kids. Just make yourself at home because you're there for the duration of the desolation of Judah. And so these guys are contradicting that, saying, no, it's not time for them to build their houses up there. In fact, they need to be back here. This city of Jerusalem is a great big pot. And we're the delicious meat inside the pot. Well, Ezekiel is told to prophesy against those guys. So verse 5, the Spirit of He who is fell upon me, and he said to me, say, thus says He who is. So you think, O house of Israel, for I know the things that come into your mind. You have multiplied your slain in this city and have filled its streets with the slain. Therefore, thus says He who is God, your slain whom you have laid in the midst of it, they're the meat. And this city is the cauldron, but you shall be brought out of the midst of it. So God says, fine. You want to use that image of a great big pot? And Jerusalem is that pot? Let me tell you. The dead people are the meat in that great big pot. And some of you are going to be dragged out and brought here. Verse 8, you have feared the sword, and I will bring the sword upon you, declares He who is God. And I will bring you out of the midst of it and give you into the hands of foreigners and execute judgments upon you. Keep in mind, these guys keep saying everything's going to be fine. The Babylonians are going to go away. We're going to get our people back. We're going to get the stuff from the temple back. Everything will be fine. Nobody needs to worry. And God says, no, that's not the way it's going to do. This city shall not be your cauldron, nor shall you be the meat in the midst of it. I will judge you at the border of Israel, and you shall know that I am he who is. For you have not walked in my statutes, nor obeyed my rules, but have acted according to the rules of the nations that are around you. So God says, you guys are wrong. We're not talking about a great, big, lovely pot of delicious meat. Jerusalem is actually a death trap right now. And you guys are going to be pulled out of it, and some of you are going to die. In fact, I skipped over verse 10. I apologize. You shall fall by the sword. I'll judge you at the borders of Israel, and you shall know that I am he who is. And all this is because of their sins. All this is because they've gone against the covenant. And then we hear this. It came to pass while I was prophesying. And remember, he's in the spirit world right now. While I was prophesying that Pelatiah, the son of Benaiah, died. So one of those guys that Ezekiel was watching from the spirit world suddenly drops down dead. And then I fell on my face and cried out with a loud voice and said, oh, he who is God, will you make a full end of the remnant of Israel? Now, he's done that before. He is scared by all of the death and the destruction, the corpses, the famine, the diseases, the armies and the blood. He's scared by seeing all of that. Even though God tells him it'll still be okay. I'm going to save back a remnant. He's scared by seeing all this. And he's scared it's going to be out of control and everybody's going to die. But God is going to keep a remnant.